Hello, everyone. Welcome to Beneath Vancouver Radio. Hopefully, you're having a wonderful day. And this is episode number 39 of the podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in. I really appreciate all the listeners, whether new or previous listeners that have been listening to all of our episodes. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. And in episode number 39, I have special guest Ray from RW Digital. Quick backstory, Ray and I actually met through, as you probably have learned through listening to this podcast, through the power of Instagram, a great tool as well to use for networking. But we've been chatting back and forth. I had the privilege of chatting with him off the mic or off the record last week. And I was like, you know what, I got to get you on the podcast. Lots of information to share for, I'm sure, a lot of people out here who are interested in the episode when it comes to either entrepreneurship, creative work, etc., stuff regarding the digital era. So Ray, thank you so much for taking the time out of your Saturday for being on the show. How are you doing?
I'm good, man. Thanks for having me today, Aaron.
No worries. Always happy to bring guests that I think will provide value to the listeners. So I won't go too much in terms of who you are and everything like that. I want to kind of let you savor that moment and introduce yourself a little bit. But as my listeners know, I'll ask the most important question at the beginning of the episode, which is, Ray, who are you today?
So just a little bit background myself. So my name is Ray, and I'm the owner of RW Digital, my digital marketing agency focused on data analytics, mostly with providing services for consumer brands. My team and I were driven by data, technology, as well as creativity. So these are the three pillars of our agency. So a little bit background about myself and just my academic background. I studied marketing and finance at SFU. And then after graduating, I joined two local digital marketing agencies. Just got my hands dirty with Google Analytics, SEO, Google Ads, Google Tech Manager, Google Search Console. So yeah,
like everything Google.
Everything Google. Yeah. A variety of tools, but all of them mostly are like related to data analytics, specific web data. And then while I was working at the two agencies, I also took part-time courses at BCIT. The program that I studied at were web development as well as graphic design. So by taking the web development program, I learned more about front-end development as well as back-end development and database as well. So like HTML, CSS, JavaScript. So for me, like just gaining more hands-on approach and experience and knowledge through the BCIT program, like it was really good for me, just get a holistic view of the entire digital space, as well as better understanding of how websites and essentially how the internet works. So right. That's really useful for me. So after working at the two agencies, I decided to go in-house at an organization. So I joined an automotive group as the digital marketing manager at the group. So I was working with like brands such as Toyota, Honda, Mazda, and Chrysler. And working as the digital marketing manager at the automotive group, I learned, I got more in depth in data analytics, just because just working with inventory, more consumer data, more inventory data, that really just helped me understand more about data analytics and consumer patterns and data mining.
Right.
And then so I was there for roughly 2 years or so, and in 2019 I decided to go on my own and then started my own agency. So far I work with a variety of automotive groups, some government organizations as well, nonprofit organizations, some consumer brands, and or the biggest achievement that like we've had so far, since launching the agency is becoming one of the finalists for Richmond Chamber of Commerce New Business of the Year Award.
Nice. Yeah.
So that's just a little.
Little backstory of what you do, which seems to be a lot. And I think out of all the guests, you know, I've had a couple of obviously entrepreneurs on the show, and whether they're more on the creative side, you know, people who do videography, photography. I don't think I've actually had the chance to talk with someone who's more on the data side. Obviously, when it comes to digital marketing and the I would say the marketing space in general, there's kind of two ways to think about it, at least, you know, in layman's terms, or the simplest way to divide it, which is the copy or kind of the creative side, which is obviously the photos, the graphics, you know, the stuff that's actually kind of being shown to your audience or your consumer. Mm-hmm. And then you have the back end stuff, right? As you mentioned, the more the data, that what drives really the decision to put that specific copy there or that specific picture in that kind of ad space. So it's nice to kind of see the reflection of both sides, because there are obviously behind the scenes, you know, underpaid campaigns or bigger campaigns and bigger companies that are obviously spending, you know, a lot of money on pushing their advertisements to their audience and to certain people. There's a reason why, you know, that they decided to go with that route or with that kind of graphics or the stuff that you actually end up seeing. So it's nice to see, I guess, both sides of the coin. So I'm going to start kind of at the beginning here. Obviously, you had mentioned that you graduated from SFU. A lot of, obviously, kind of, as you said, got your hands dirty, started working different jobs in the sense of the space and kind of understanding what you liked and you didn't like. What kind of pushed you to choose more of the, you know, in comparison, the more the data side, the more the back end, the more the numbers, so to speak?
Right. So for me, actually, my career in marketing started actually in market research. So mm-hmm. my first marketing role, like semi-marketing role, I was a research assistant for SFU professor. So he was actually a PhD candidate at that time. Mm-hmm. At that time, he wanted to find out why people or YouTubers created consumer generate content. So mm-hmm. for example, if I just did a video of a video for Nike or a Coca-Cola, like just for fun, for pure entertainment. And then he wanted to find out why. So my role as a research assistant, I had to reach out to these YouTubers and I would interview them.
Okay.
Go through a list of questionnaire and I would interview them. And then we would collect data. And then, yeah, I think they'll use different tools such as like SPSS or Excel to quantify the findings and then mm-hmm. research. So my background, like initially, was actually within more on the digital space. But after work, and then that was when I was SFU. And then afterwards, after I graduated, I actually did a couple of internships, and in those roles, it was more like PR. So
right.
It was there's an app company in Richmond. So they do, it's a newspaper subscription app. Mm-hmm. So people could subscribe to the app and then they would get access to, I don't know the exact number, but I would say like over 1,000 or 2,000, whatever the number is, of magazines,
right, yeah,
and newspapers worldwide. So the app itself, it's really designed for like travelers, business people, and lawyers, like people who read news a lot, mm-hmm. want like premium content. So that's kind of that's what the app does. And then my role was actually to reach out to bloggers, and then get reviews from these bloggers about the app. So through that role, I gained some experience in PR, PR and outreach and overall brand awareness. And then after working in that role, that was just I think it was a part-time contract role while I was a student, or like early, like, or not long after I graduated from SFU. And then afterwards, I joined an agency, a local agency, and I got like it was an entry level role. I was a marketing assistant, so I got my hands dirty, like I said before, on like a little bit of design, a little bit of like some administrative work, some reporting. So it was a very entry level role, and you know, I just touched different areas of digital marketing or just online marketing. Overall, and then afterwards, after working there for I think it was close to 2 years, I joined another an agency also in Greater Vancouver. So I started off as a marketing coordinator, and then in that role, I was actually more of a copywriter. So mm-hmm. at that agency, I wrote content, blog content for the agency. I wrote guest blogs on behalf of the agency. So like wrote articles for like Small Business BC. BCAMA, I don't know if you're familiar, like this just local marketing associations.
Associations, yeah.
Yeah, and then even like, I think it was like Hootsuite, I think we got article on there as well. So I started that most on content and just managing Google Ads campaign like Google Analytics for the agency. So I was, so that role, I think I stayed for roughly a year or so, and then I got moved up a bit, became like a account manager, digital marketing manager for the agency. So then I started handling client work. So I became client facing, and I also handle like production work. So the production work could be doing some design for clients or doing the running the campaigns for clients, as well as doing the reporting. And then in terms of web development, like some SEO work, some technical work, maybe some backend development work for clients, for SEO projects. So for that role, it was quite a bit of data, but because of the nature of the company, it was actually very IT based. So I learned more about IT through the company. So I was there overall collectively between the two roles. I think I was there for like 3 years or so. And then afterwards, I joined the automotive group. The reason why I joined the group was because it's a relatively established company. It's like, I think it's like 500 employees, 400 or 500 employees. So for me, at that time, I had quite a bit of like technical and production experience. For me, I really wanted to gain more experience in the corporate world. So for me, I think joining a local company, a couple hundred employees, it will be a good kind of learning opportunity for me at the time. So the company, and then at that time, actually, I already worked with an automotive dealership, another local automotive dealership prior. So at the old agency I was working at, so I already had some automotive marketing at the time. So it was a relatively simple transition working into the automotive group. Obviously, working in house, there were more stakeholders to work with, but overall, it was a relatively new experience for me. And then working in the digital marketing manager role, that's where I really got a lot into data analytics. I'm specific with Google Analytics, because when it comes to automotive, it's actually a lot of it's just inventory. So you learn more about data. So with the market, when you segment your data, you're really trying to understand consumer patterns, understanding interest, the behavior. And really, it's not really about the car. It's you're really
more who's buying it.
You're really trying to get inventory. There's so many ways to dice up data and learn more. You can segment data into, SUV, different types of which year. And then once you segment and learn more about the different vehicles, you segment different vehicles and you can define different groups who are interested, and they can compare their behaviors and all this information that they can help you market your products better. So for me, that's when I learned more about data, the influence of data, how it drives a lot of organizations, and then also working in a group, because all these groups, obviously they have stores. They all all these dealers, they have franchise license from the actual manufacturer. So right now, if you own a Toyota dealership, you need a Toyota franchise license, for example. So
I see, okay.
So you still need to follow the brand mandate. You have to follow the rules. A lot of these big corporate brands, they're very, very fierce with their brand guidelines. Find you things like that. They're quite diligent.
As they should be, though, right? Because you're representing, in that case, Toyota, right? To some extent.
So for me, just working the group, I also like a little bit of experience working with the manufacturers and kind of how these big global brands, how they operate. And a lot of them, they have regional offices. So for example, like Toyota, for example, or Honda, for example, they'll have a regional office in Greater Vancouver or Western Canada. So for me, I just some also working relationship with some of the managers in Western Canada and kind of also fed them data about like more like localized information.
Right.
Me just, yeah, like kind of getting a glimpse of like the bigger corporation and how they operate. Yeah. So initially my goal actually was to continue like the corporate ladder, like my role, my goal was to join like a bigger corporation.
Like what? What would
I,
be what was earlier or yeah or earlier Ray's dream? or younger Ray.
I was actually planning, ideally, if I could, I'd get into like Nike. If I could get Nike, that would be great. Like moving to Portland.
Right.
Like
no tax.
No tax. it's interesting. Like, just I love Nike as a brand. I love, like, growing up, like, Nike has my favorite brand, even right now, it's still my favorite brand. Yeah, but initially, like, we've been working automotive, like, my goal was to actually join, like one of the corporate, like, the corporate offices.
Right.
So it could be Toyota Canada, Volkswagen Canada. So it's, like, essentially, I would have the whole spectrum of, like the career development phase, or however you want to put it, like going from an agency all the way to like a bigger organization, global firm.
You're kind of overseeing almost everything at that point within obviously Canada, right?
Yeah, exactly. So for me, I started, like I said before, I started a small agency and then moved to another agency, which was, it's still relatively small, but it was bigger than the first one. And then the jump up of that was to like a 400 or 500 staff company. And then the next goal was to join like a bigger brand, like a Toyota Canada, or like a Volkswagen Canada. but just a variety of factors. I just decided to go on my own in 2019. So yeah, it's just been a journey, quite a interesting, exciting journey so far.
Since then, yeah. I can imagine.
Yeah.
So
yeah, sure.
No, I'm just going to quickly chime in there, and I'm loving the way that you kind of like formatted everything in terms of, you know, where you started and how you kind of worked around your way with that position or that job and then your next job and the transitions between that. So I think that's what a lot of people or sometimes even when, you know, individuals that are listening or even outside of this podcast, when you're starting a new position, there's like so many different skills that you can attain and learn from within that position that you can potentially transition to or even take to, you know, your next job, right?
Yeah.
Especially for, you know, young adults or graduates that are just maybe entering the workforce, is, you know, your first job may not necessarily obviously be your dream job, right? It'll be maybe within the field that you're looking for, and you get your kind of your feet wet, as they say. But learning from those jobs are super important, and then being able to transition that into the next step and then the next step and the next step. So that kind of actually, if you don't mind kind of answering this question for the listeners out there, there who are, whether like, you know, in university, about to graduate, just graduated, have graduated, etc., what would you kind of recommend for on more the Google side and the more the analytics side? Because from my understanding, right, that's not something that's, you know, traditionally taught right in university, right? I'm assuming you didn't maybe learn that as much as well when you were studying at SFU. From my understanding, as I mentioned, I don't know. There's no Google Analytics course, right? There's no Google 101 at UBC or SFU or wherever you may be studying, right? So how would someone go about who's listening to this episode right now? Is like, wow, that's pretty cool. I want to actually, I want to learn about the consumer behavior or the, you know, the data behind who buys X car or who buys this car or who buys Z car. What would you recommend for people who are maybe interested in that kind of, you know, area of work?
Yeah. So to start, actually, I think people should like, or students can go back and learn more about like statistics. So learning more statistics will help you like derive data better. Not just Google Analytics data, but just numbers overall.
Data in general. Yeah.
In general, like even for me, like I'm still continuing to learn like more about like refresh my memory or learn more about stats. Or just, you know, like learning, practicing more Excel function to better segment data. So it's like, you know, like it's the knowledge. It's
continuously learning,
Exactly. It's limitless. There's no end to this, essentially. And the more knowledge you have, the better, the more arsenals you have in terms of your capabilities.
Correct, so yeah.
That's So that's my one first step. And then another thing to learn, I would recommend, is actually learning more about web development, like just an intro to web development, understanding how web browsers work, how data or bots would parse your your website. And then, so later on when you learn Google Analytics, you have a better idea how Google Analytics collect data. Just because like Google itself, Analytics is not a perfect tool. It has limitations. There is some discrepancy between different Google products. Like one data may report, like say you like one number, and then another Google product reports a different number for the same kind of campaign, for example. And just because the difference, just because how they collect data may be slightly different.
Right. Yeah.
So it's learning web, like it really going to help you how Google overall analytics work. And then once you have kind of this like pretty strong foundation, Google like analytics, it does have like online courses that you can take. Lynda.com is also a great resource in terms of learning Google
Analytics. That's the old LinkedIn, right? Old LinkedIn training?
Yeah, LinkedIn acquired Lynda.
Right, yeah.
So you can get a free account. So what you need to do is you just need to get a library card from your local library.
Right.
And from my understanding, all libraries, they have some sort of like package or some partnership with Lynda. So if you have a library card, you can access Lynda through like a library portal, and then you enter your library card and password and stuff like that, and then
you're good to go.
You're good to go, exactly. So
there you go.
Yeah. So Lynda is great for learning, and like for me, like I found Lynda like terrific at all the courses and different, not just with Google Analytics and just different a variety of lessons that they have. For me, I find them very useful. If you want, and then even within Lynda, you can learn more about like Google Sheets or like Excel and all like learn different functions that they have. All that stuff, all that information are going to help you just learn how to segment data more and derive insights.
Right.
Yeah. So
I like it. Lynda, I think I'm pretty sure someone I think has brought that up one point or another. I don't know if you've tried or obviously different platforms have different kind of strengths, I would say, when it comes to their classes or what they offer. But, you know, things like maybe Skillshare, you know, there's a bunch of free trials there. Udemy has paid courses. I don't know if you've experienced Udemy or not. I've heard it's decent when they go on sale. Sometimes they're good, sometimes they're bad. So your mileage may vary. But I think in general, obviously, library card is obviously a lot easier to attain. I don't know now, actually, with the whole COVID situation. But if you have a library card, then having that access to Lynda is obviously a really nice thing. I think as well for a lot of people, even myself included, right? I've played around with, you know, campaigns, whether it be on my personal side or with, you know, at internships or at jobs. You know, obviously the budgets are not going to be as big as, you know, a Nike or even maybe an automotive group or something along those lines. But it's nice to be able to see and understand the platform, right? You know, something like Facebook Ads Manager, even understanding how that works and how you can utilize that and how you can, you know, how to actually make an ad and everything is a great place to get started. You don't even necessarily have to, you know, actually create a campaign, but just going on that website and understanding, and Google Analytics, going on that and kind of looking at different websites. And if you have, you know, if you're working at a job right now or an internship and you're in the marketing department or within that space, you know, maybe even asking your manager or someone that's in that would be just like, hey, do you have, you know, can I have a quick coffee chat or lunch and learn? I know a lot of companies have been doing that a lot recently, lunch and learn on, you know, Google Analytics. Doesn't have to be super in depth, but at least you have the foundation, and then that'll you can take that foundation to, you know, lynda.com and then go even more in depth like that. And who knows, you know, maybe they'll ask you a couple months down the road, you know, does anyone know Google Analytics very well? And you'd be like, yeah, I actually know quite a bit. I'd love to be able to implement my learnings, right, and actually apply that to a setting. So it's about being proactive, right? I think that's a big thing, especially now in this, in this digital world where obviously a lot of things are changing and, you know, you have the ability to access a lot of different information and try different things and everything like that. So being proactive, and it'll show to your supervisors, right? Or the company that you're working with, right? Ray, Aaron, Chris, Bob, whoever it is, is taking the initiative to learn that outside of work hours and is really interested in that kind of work or in that kind of field or analytics or whatever the case may be. So I like that, Ray. I like that a lot. And I appreciate you sharing kind of your story behind that. I'm going to fast forward now and kind of switch gears and kind of, you know, jump the script, as they say it, or flip the script, sorry, to you working obviously for yourself now and being an entrepreneur and a business owner. I don't think you have mentioned this. You mentioned this to me again last week, but you started, and correct me if I'm wrong, March of 2019, correct?
So I left my previous position in mid-March, and I started officially in April 2019.
April. So not even a little over a year now. Yeah. So, and obviously a big chunk of that time frame has been spent during COVID. Yeah. How has that been for you? And obviously as a business owner, maybe not so much as, you know, as a coffee shop or, you know, more brick and mortar business owner, but more in the digital space. How has the whole pandemic situation affected you? And how's that kind of transition been for you?
Yeah. So initially in March, I was pretty terrified.
as I think anyone was, especially a business owner.
I think when we had the first lockdown, I was only 11 months in.
Even a year, and you're like, oh god,
I was like 11 months in and a pandemic, I'm like, what's that? And then it just hit. And then luckily, like I think I mentioned before, in our previous chat, like a lot of brand, like company I work with, like they weren't affected by COVID or the pandemic that much. Mm-hmm. So I work with some like food company, like storage company. Right now we're like working with some through another agency down in LA.
Right.
And then they work with brands that not like they haven't really been affected by the whole health situation. In fact, like they've actually like picked up more,
right,
like more work. And I like when through them, I've also like gotten more work, just because like the clients that they work with, like traditionally maybe they rely more on retail. Now they don't have retail anymore. Now they want to invest more in the digital space. So like for me, like that kind of just pretty fortunate that happened. Like a lot of brands I work with, they either weren't affected by the health crisis that much, or B. They were affected by the retail space, and then which pushed them to do more with their digital marketing or website. So we've actually worked with several website projects, just because like some company they were kind of hesitant to revamp their site or things like that. But now
was the time, yeah.
or they have like cash in reserve, and the slowdown overall in their sales revenue and things like that, like it kind of gave them a breather to actually take the time to revamp their website. So that kind of like happened, like for me that's what happened mostly with me, like for me, because I don't deal with too much with like tourism or hospitality,
right? So,
I don't really have like clientele within that space, so like I haven't really been impacted, just because I know a lot of business, like different agencies, like if they're local, they work with a lot of hospitality clients. So if that were the case, then they'd be
impacted. That's definitely a bit of a struggle. In that case, everything, you know, tourism wise and hospitality wise, just kind of shut down, right? So
exactly, but for me, like just the way that the businesses I was and still am working with, like they haven't been impacted by like health crisis. In fact, like a lot of them that actually benefit from the crisis.
Yeah.
So it's quite fortunate. But overall, like I was terrified, like in like March and April.
Yeah.
Like didn't know what to expect, because if the economy locks down or ceases to operate, then it affects everybody, right? Like all additions. Yeah. So
yeah, it's a blanket effect, or kind of everyone kind of gets affected in one way or another. And I think we saw that as well, like obviously in March, April time, where for I would say most of the part of those 2 months, yeah, one can argue that the economy pretty much shut down, right? I mean, not a lot of things were open, and people weren't obviously doing their normal, you know, spending power, and the spending capital wasn't what it was, you know, prior to that. So I'm happy to hear, obviously, I think you shared that a little bit with me, again, prior to the episode, but I'm happy to hear that that's the case, and that, you know, it's still growing, and that you're still getting the clients and everything like that. So in terms of, I guess, for kind of a fun question, I would say, I hope this is a fun question, and I should have asked this to other people as well that are kind of in the space, but if someone wants to create a website, you know, obviously there's Wix, there's Squarespace, WordPress. Let's say they have zero idea of what to do, but they're willing to learn. They're willing to take the time. What would be your recommendation, actually, since you're obviously within that space? What would be your recommendation? Do you go with the drag and drops, the Wix, the Squarespace, or do you recommend, you know, just take the time for WordPress? You'll thank yourself later.
I would stick with like WordPress and then later, just because I have worked with clients that they built with Wix, drag and drop. And it's just in terms of SEO and like SEO, like even like content management, like it's not these like simple drag and draw website. They're actually not that simple to wait, like to manage.
Right.
So yeah, so it'd be a lot better in my opinion to go with a WordPress, just do it right the first time. A little bit, spend a little bit of money. But your website can last for a couple of years, so
right.
you'll see a return, and even like other like more benefits, just because like you can do way more, like you say with WordPress, like you can, like, even with SEO or other Google tools, like they're a lot easier to implement on a WordPress site. Yeah, and then even like managing content, like exporting information, a lot of different varieties, like things, like it'd be a lot easier. And if you want to, let's just say you design a WordPress site, and then say 2 or 3 years later you don't like it, or they don't like it, like you want to refresh it, and you want to refresh it on still on WordPress, it's a lot easier to redevelop a site on WordPress than it is to switch from Squarespace to WordPress.
Right.
There's like a couple steps that you can remove if you're just doing like you're redesigning a site directly on WordPress. So for me, when I actually started the company last year, I actually built it on Squarespace. So yeah, like it was.
There you go. So obviously, there's a reason why you're saying WordPress. You're learning from your mistakes.
Exactly. I was like, oh, I just needed something like, you know, quick and easy. Like I have used like Squarespace and in the past, I'm like, it should do the work, but just the way the website is developed, like it's not, in my opinion, it's not particularly SEO friendly. But a website should be, especially in today's age. So right. I think I use a Squarespace page for I think like 3 or 4 months, and then I'm like, oh, I switched from Squarespace to WordPress. But when I made the switch, like it was not super complex, but there are definitely like more steps that needed to be taken compared to just switching from WordPress to another WordPress site.
Right. And I'm sure as well, like lynda.com and all these different things that we had mentioned, I'm sure there's probably like a WordPress tutorial, YouTube, and all these different resources that people have, I'm sure, that they can, you know, learn and, you know, take it step by step. And it's definitely not going to be an overnight thing, especially if you're tackling, you know, website development for the very first time. But I was just curious. I bring up that question because obviously when it comes to websites and everything, there's all these different options out there. And that was one of the things that, you know, when I first started kind of fiddling with my website, I was like unsure of, you know, what was the best way. And obviously for me, I was like at the time, actually Squarespace was not even as popular as it is now. At the time, it was like very Wix heavy. So I tried out Wix and, you know, it was a nice way to start. But yeah, out of all, like, as you know, as you kind of go further into to the quote unquote scene of, you know, websites and learn more about different people and see what other people are using. It seems to be like, take the time, learn WordPress, and you'll thank yourself later down the road. With all the options that you have and the ability to manipulate your website and adapt it if need be. So I was just curious on your thoughts of that. Again, it's not meant as a way to bash or hate on Wix or Squarespace. Yeah. I still use some of those myself. But it was just an opinion I wanted to hear from someone who obviously does that for a living and is a service that you offer within your agency. So I think that's the beauty of it as well, right? It's just being able to hear from other people and people who have, you know, a lot more experience than I do for sure in that space. So I appreciate you sharing your thoughts on that. So I'm going to actually ask you probably the second to last question here. Okay. And again, it's kind of more of a fun, open-ended one, take it as you will, but I was curious and hopefully my listeners are curious as well. When it comes to, you know, starting your own thing and especially, you know, being your own boss and everything along those lines, overall, I would say, obviously with the experience that you have, working in different kind of positions and everything, you obviously went into that as, you know, with confidence and knowing that you can get the job done. What was your kind of biggest, I guess, obstacle or reservation obstacle or reservation that you had, whether about it be your professional self or your personal self? Like, was there ever a point of doubt in your head of like, is this really, you know, what I want to do in the sense of, you know, working for yourself? What was kind of like that transition like?
Overall, the transition actually been relatively smooth. So I've actually wanted to start an agency, I think, even like in my early 20s, just being like a big Nike, guy. Like, I've always liked agencies,
right?
And what I like about it, it just, you know, you work with a wide variety of clients. You get hands on to different type of projects. Like, it's always something new and interesting. So for me, I truly enjoy that. So it has always been like my goal. So even before I would mention that I wanted to go into a bigger corporation, before starting a company, like, goal was eventually still to start a company, it was still being an agency.
So, right.
So it just like, I skipped.
It's a matter of when.
So my goal has always been just to start my own agency. I think in terms of obstacle, obviously when you start something new, it does take a little bit of time to establish some sort of brand awareness and credibility. But for me, like I've been in the industry, including my research assistant role back at SFU, I've been in the industry a little bit over 10 years now. Stuck in Greater Vancouver. So overall, like in terms of network, pretty solid network, circle of network. So when I started a company, like there's a decent flow of referrals.
Right.
So that's kind of how I have overcome this obstacle. But obviously there's always room, like not everybody knows me, obviously, but
everybody knows Ray. Come on.
Obviously, like I'm still a small company, like a growing company, and like building, establishing credibility and building brand awareness. It's an ongoing project or ongoing work.
Right.
But for me, just because, you know, being in the industry for 10 years or so, like it, and then. Most of my friends, they're in their early 30s now. So a lot of them, they're in like mid-management, like managerial roles. So a lot of them, they have slowly become like decision makers. So it's easier to get projects, like compared to say, if I start a company at 22 and all my friends are like assistants, like it's hard.
Harder to convince.
you're not like you're very new, like there's still like a lot of knowledge to be gained, and then be like your circle of friends, a lot of them are very young, then it's harder to essentially get projects. But for me, like I said, like just, you know, been in the industry for some time and have a decent network and just getting referrals through people I know. And that's kind of like how I survived pandemic, essentially. Really, right now, I would say the last 8 months, it's like 100% referral.
Yeah. And that's the most important part as well. Sorry to cut you off. The matter of, you know, word of mouth, right? And I think for small businesses, I think it was Gary Vee who quoted this. And for those who know me, you know, I'm a big Gary Vee fan. Word of mouth is the oxygen for small businesses, right? So being able to hear, get, you know, work from one person who then tells you, you know, Ray did a really good job, you know, if you need this, and then just kind of continuous domino effect, right? So that's the way to kind of get the ball rolling. And then, you know, that's, as you mentioned, you establish your credibility, your brand awareness, and then from there people start kind of noticing who you are and what you offer.
But overall, like I would say, like overall for small businesses, like the first couple of years are like the toughest, just because, you know, you're trying to really just get people to know you. I've talked to other small business owners who are around my age, maybe a little bit older. They've told me that, like, yeah, like their first couple of years when they start a company, they've actually worked part-time jobs, just because they weren't making money from their business. Not necessarily working field, like just different field, retail and things like that. They really needed that additional income to supplement like their life, like to live, basically.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
So the first couple of years, generally for small businesses, like are the toughest, at least from what my experience and just what I've heard from other seasoned business professionals.
Yeah, I agree. That's also what I've heard, and it's kind of like the almost not necessarily not what's the word I'm looking for is not rule of thumb, but kind of like the generalization or kind of common knowledge, if you will, where newer businesses, the first couple of years is where you struggle the most in terms of obviously making sure that you're getting in the income, but also not even just income in general, but consistent income. Yeah. And making sure that it's, you know, becoming retainers and stuff like that. So it's obviously important, and I'm happy to hear that obviously through your connections and your network, as again, listeners of the podcast, I've mentioned it a couple of times now with a variety of guests, the importance of your network and building that network. Doesn't even matter if it's within your field or professions or whatever, it's having that network and making sure that, you know, people at least to some extent know who you are and what you do. And I'm not saying go in and out and connect with every single individual on the planet, but you know, doing networking strategically and putting yourself in these situations where you can introduce yourself or you can just be like, yeah, I'm, you know, I'm Ray. I do this and this. I've done work with XYZ. Oh, okay, cool. Well, thank you, Ray. I guess not business cards anymore. I don't know what they'll be in the future. Mm-hmm. Maybe they will be, but you know, they'll have you at least, you've made that introduction, and you know, if push comes to shove, and be like, oh yeah, actually I chatted with Ray at this event or whatever. Yeah, let's chat with him. So yeah. Importance of establishing that foundation is crucial. So wrapping near the end of the episode, Ray, I really appreciate you taking the time again to kind of answer these questions and to give kind of a lot of advice. I think obviously for such a tenured and experienced individual like yourself, hopefully the listeners can take the information that you're saying and kind of apply it in their areas. And, you know, some of it has more specific for obviously the data side and market research, but I think there's also been some very good general kind of life advice in general. So I appreciate that. And hopefully people can take away from this episode. But to kind of wrap it up now, again, as the listeners may know, this last kind of question here is what I ask all my guests, and you can interpret it as you like. I just kind of wanted to know what your thoughts are on this. And that question is, what piece of advice would you give to younger Ray, to your younger self? That can be either professionally or personally, doesn't matter. But what piece of advice would you give to younger Ray?
Yeah. So, well, for me, I have one advice for if I were to give myself, at least professionally, would be be more proactive. In my earlier days, like I think I was like a little bit too laid back. Mm-hmm. So like for me, like I think I could have gone into the digital field even like 3 or 4 years earlier. Mm-hmm. That time, I think I was just, you know, a bit
like, just chilling,
a little bit like, yeah, just chilling with friends, hanging out. Like, I wasn't too concerned, or wasn't too concerned about career. I wasn't thinking too much. Mm-hmm. So that's why later on, obviously, my mid-20s, I was doing a little bit of a catching up. That's why I was being very proactive and going to part-time classes at PCIT. And I was attending networking events at BC, like BCAMA. Just a variety of different things.
Right.
For me, like, I was part of that. Really was to catch up. But if I were a little bit more proactive, they just say 18, 19, or 20, like learning, you know, taking some part-time classes about digital marketing or development here and there, then I think I didn't have to cram a bunch of stuff to cram a bunch of things to do in my mid-20s. Mm-hmm. And I think going forward, I think for everybody, like new grads, fresh grads, or students who are about to graduate, like, I think everybody has to be proactive and continue to learn. Just because it's hyper competitive, like,
right?
Like, I don't know any industry that isn't hyper competitive. I was kind of thinking about this like recently as well, because with globalization, just company, like, you know, like with the whole health crisis, you know, budgets, everything is a concern. So companies, they may not be hiring and as many people as before, or they require this, like, one person do more work. Mm-hmm. Also more people looking for jobs as well if companies are not hiring as much. So everything's more just more competitive. So the supply exceeds the demand. So essentially, to stay on top, whether you're looking for next job or you're competing in your industry as a business owner, like, you always have to be proactive. Continue to learn, continue to network. That's pretty much what a person can do, because there's so many external factors we can't control.
Those things will pan out by themselves.
Yeah. we need to just be more proactive and kind of think about, like, what are the next trends in the industry that you want to pursue. So how would they affect you, say, like, for web, for, like, say, for data, like the future, or even right now, like, a lot is with AI and big data and data analytics. So mm-hmm. those things are something that for me, or people within my space, need to continue, like, to learn more about, and learn how they would affect our work or projects, or how we can leverage it to improve our companies, improve ourselves. Even with the creative field, I think there are different things, like for example, like, people can draw, like, doodle drawings sort of, and then they become like graphics. Like, you can draw something on a pad, and then AI will help you, like, recreate that, like, in a nicer design. So all mm-hmm. those kind of affects, like, graphic designers, because they don't need to hire a graphic designer anymore. They can purchase a software, and the software can help them do a lot of the heavy lifting. So maybe for some custom designs, companies, like, need to pay a designer to do some of the work, but a lot of ongoing work, they can just use a software or things like that to help them produce graphics. So, but for designers, like, they need to be aware of all these changes in the landscape and see how they can continue to thrive. Overall, I just need to be overall proactive and keep pushing.
Mm-hmm. No, yeah, that's great advice. And yeah, I think that's just kind of reflecting on that specifically, and I might have mentioned it in earlier episodes. I think that was, for me, that realization of being proactive came in my last year of university, in my fifth year, just because, you know, especially for me, I was, you know, studying, you know, kinesiology, and it wasn't necessarily at the time, and well, even right now, obviously, I'm not even working in that field. I knew that perhaps it wasn't going to be, you know, my career choice, or at least right away, right? Maybe down the road. But so I had to feel like I was almost putting in overtime, so to speak, in terms of networking and going and joining clubs and, you know, going to events and just being able to establish myself within the, not even establish myself, because that makes me sound like I'm important, which I'm not, but at least kind of familiarize myself with the, you know, the marketing space, right? So I joined like the Marketing Association. I met a lot of great people, both like, you know, the fellow execs there, but also just in general, people that I met at the events, different companies, different people from those companies. So being able to put myself in that situation was great. And again, that would not have, you know, even become a reality if I wasn't proactive in thinking about like, okay, I like marketing. I like the business side of things. Like, how can I put myself in that area or in that field, being a non-business student? So I think in general, you know, for me, it was almost like a switch, kind of an epiphany. I think for me, since it was kind of like, okay, I'm graduating soon, like this is, whether I like it or not, school's coming to a close. Mm-hmm. I got to do something about it. It was kind of like that for me, but I'm sure other people have different reasons and different kind of moments in their life where they're like, okay, yeah, I'm going to be a little bit more proactive now. And you know, I started taking LinkedIn seriously, started kind of figuring out how can I maximize my LinkedIn. So all these different things, all these different tools obviously will come around at different points in their lives for different people. But I think in general, the consensus is that it's important to take those steps. And, you know, no matter how small that step may be, if you're just inviting one or two people to a coffee chat, it's a step in the right direction, right? It's a baby step. And multiple baby steps will eventually lead to one big step. So it's just taking it day by day and understanding, you know, what your goals are, what do you hope to achieve in 2 years, 1 year, 6 months, etc. So establishing those goals is also, I think, is super important. But thank you so much, Ray. I really appreciate it. Thank you for taking the time again on your Saturday afternoon to have a chat with me, to share your insights, share your experience and your stories. All again, hopefully the listeners can take something from that and just apply that to their life, or apply that, you know, whether they're in school or potentially, you know, whatever aspect they are in their life, hopefully they can implement it one way or another. So where can they find you? Where can people, you know, maybe reach out to you if they have questions about market research or anything along those lines? Where can people find you, Ray?
Yeah, so they can just email me at raywang@rwdigital.ca, or they can send me a Instagram message. So it's digital. So my handle is digital.rw. Mm-hmm. So yeah, either one works for me, and I'll get back to you guys as soon as possible.
Yeah, I can confirm your replies to DMs. That's how we got. That's how we got communicating in the first part. But I'll make sure to put that in again in the podcast description for in the Spotify or Apple or whatever, in the description of the podcast in general, and people can click on that if they need be. But thank you again, Ray. Really appreciate it. Hopefully you enjoyed it. I know I did, and hopefully the listeners did as well. Thank you everyone for tuning in. This again was episode number 39 of Beneath Vancouver Radio, and this is Aaron signing off. Thank you, Ray.
Thank you, Aaron. Thanks for having me.